And what you're going to see, it's probably a little bit hard to tell from the video, is actually projection onto a real building. So all of the shifting of the building is actually very accurately aligned projection with the real features of the building. It makes the building look like it's moving. When we're watching a video, it's hard to tell that it's not simply a video animation to some extent, but this is actually a live event, and the sound is live too. Let's hope it works. This event was at the launch of a new public space in Songdo City. Songdo is a very large private enterprise new city being built outside Incheon in Korea. And they were literally constructing the pavements before the event, which is probably why they put this in the video. So that's all simply done with projected light onto the surface, and they've done very precise alignment between where they're projecting shadows or light features with the existing architecture. So it produces this very interesting interaction between a solid building, something that's very material and stable and durable, and between the ephemeral fluid qualities of light. And it gives you this sense of the way in which the light can literally make the building start to shift around and dance. I mean, watching it in that space was an extraordinary experience because you felt this sense of the building shifting all around you, even though you knew you were sitting in a large public amphitheater with a 4 or 5-story building surrounding you. I think there's some of the kinds of ways in which current lighting technology, projection technology, LED screens can start to be used really creatively within the city. But mostly what these screens are used for is to produce this kind of very excessive advertising space. I mean, this is number one Times Square in New York. It's a building with 9 LED screens from street up to its crown, it no longer has inhabitants. They don't need the rent. They just get rent from renting the screens. It's very much what Virilio talks about as a media building. It has no tenants. And so we tend to think about these technologies in relation to these kinds of excessive environments like Times Square or like Hachiko Crossing in Shinjuku and Tokyo. But I could put up scenes from many cities around the world and they would look reasonably similar. The screens high up, dominating the terrain, the people right down there feeling very small. There's something interesting about these environments, the colours and the excess of them, but I think there's also something problematic about the relationship that they construct for the inhabitants of the city. They tend to say, we're very big and important, you're insignificant, you don't matter. And I wonder if there's a way around doing something differently. That first piece that I showed you, the Jenny Holzer piece, this is from 1982 on the Spectacolor billboard, gives you some sense of how might we repurpose these screens, how might we alter the purpose of them so they're not simply about advertising, about selling more commodities, but they're about public forms of communication, maybe art, maybe messages that people send to each other. So Jenny Holzer's work, it's text-based work, and she's putting up messages on an advertising site that probably, when people see them, go, huh, that's a bit odd. They're a little bit out of the ordinary for advertising. When she's saying something like, money creates taste or private property creates crime. I think one other really interesting example. Oh, there's a number of these screens that have started coming up around the world in the last 5 or 6 years. This is one in Amsterdam. It's an outdoor screen in a plaza. Not showing advertising, simply there to show video art. And again, it's this idea of, well, if the audience isn't coming into the art gallery, let's put the art gallery outside where the audience is and put work up that they might not otherwise encounter. Because we know from art galleries, it's a very small self-selecting audience that visits the art gallery. If you have a screen in a public space and you're putting different kinds of content on it, cultural content, art content, you can find a very different audience. One that doesn't necessarily expect to see that kind of thing. That's a good loud one. In the UK, there's a network of screens that have been built, firstly starting in northern cities like Manchester, in partnership with the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, and they've been used a lot for outdoor events, things like rock concerts, but also classical music performances, ballets and so on. And they're associated a lot with getting large-ish crowds in public spaces watching these events. This is one in Liverpool. You can see, or you might not be able to see, it says Black Screen Film and Video Festival, and there's a group of people down here dancing in relation to something that's happening up on the screen. So it can become a kind of support element for interactive public events. And this is also a shot of a crowd watching one of the BBC screens. I suspect a football match, but this kind of intense emotional involvement. There's a different type of audience, a different type of spectating that's going on here. It's not television at home where you're on your own or with your immediate family, and it's not cinema where you're sitting in the dark and you're immobilised in your seat. But there's a whole crowd there that you can see. People are moving around, they're talking, and there can still be this kind of intense identification with what's happening on the screen. So it can create a different type of event, perhaps one linked to sport or to music or something like that. This is a screen where I come from in Melbourne at Federation Square. And the event here was that the then Australian Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, giving a speech in Parliament. It was a day of apology to the so-called stolen generation of Indigenous Australian people who were taken away from their families under official government policy for 50 or 60 years. And the Prime Minister on this day in 2007 was making a national apology on behalf of the nation. And a lot of people went into public spaces to watch it, what was taking place. So you start to see, and this is very recent, the last 5 or 6 or so years, different types of events that can take place in relation to these screens situated in public spaces. I want to show you a little bit of a video, because of the next possibility, which is where our research went. We started thinking about what happens if these screens aren't simply display devices, but if they're interactive. If you can allow the audience to start to control the screen in some way, what might you do? This is a project that developed in Berlin in 2001. People might have seen it. It was done by a group called the Chaos Computer Club, Project Blinken Lights. And we've only a couple of minutes of this video, assuming it works. It's a very simple idea. It's not that sophisticated, the technology there. They've just got lights behind windows in a building. They've got a computer control to when the light's on or off, so it's a simple binary system. And they have written a simple software program enabling people to phone in and then use their mobile phone as a control device. This was a project that was really interesting for us, thinking about what happens to the screen if you want to give people participation? Now everybody's carrying a mobile phone. There's a very easy device that we can use to allow there to be an interface between different people and screens. And we're also starting to think, this isn't about 2007, 2008, Now that broadband is becoming more common, perhaps it's easy to link up screens from one city to another city. They don't have to be single installations like Project Blinkenlights in Berlin, but it might be a screen in Melbourne and a screen in Seoul. The idea being, with the internet, the connectivity is no longer so difficult and not so expensive. I mean, you could always link up screens if you bought satellite time, but it might cost you $30,000 US an hour, so that's a bit difficult. This is the arena in Songdo that you saw the projection before up on this area. And we developed a partnership with an art centre in Seoul, Art Centre Narvi, to link up the large screen in Melbourne at Federation Square with one in this case in Songdo, that they were charged with programming. And as part of that event that Anti-VJ's projection piece was in, we also developed two interactive pieces using SMS, mobile phone messaging, as the interface to the screen for audiences in Seoul and audiences in Melbourne. The idea being that people in those different public spaces could each influence what was on the screen at the same time. That's the screen in Songdo. The event was called Come Join Us, Mr. Orwell, which was referring to, I guess, that rather pessimistic vision of what the technological future would be like by the English novelist George Orwell, but also to the great Korean video artist Park Nam-June, who did a wonderful piece, I think it was called Good Morning, Mr. Orwell, which was the first kind of global video piece done in the 1970s. And this is the situation at Federation Square. I'll just describe this first piece. It's called SMS Origins. It's just simply a map of the world. And you're invited to text message where you were born and where your mother and father were born. And then the map will sketch out those trajectories. And people in Songdo are doing the same thing at the same time. So what it does as a work is it builds up over time a network of relations. It's going to be different each time it's displayed. And it's simply reflecting the people in the space in Melbourne, the people in the space in Korea, where they've come from, where their families have come from. Just show you a couple of the images. And I think what's interesting is that, as well as showing you all of the connections, the array between them, each time a new message is sent to the screen, it tells you which one it's currently mapping. So you have a sense of, here's your own piece, you know what your own work is, and then it's located into a collective work. It remains distinctive. So these are people in Melbourne sending their texts to the screen. I'm going to finish that piece there. Now, another piece we were involved with . This is a piece called Solar Equation, much larger scale piece by the Mexican-Canadian artist Rafael Lozano-Hemmer. And he did this piece in Melbourne in 2010. What he's done is construct a large spherical balloon, what they call a heliostat, and that's tethered in the public space. And there's five projectors around. They're projecting imagery onto the balloon. The balloon is a scale model of the sun, and the imagery is taken from solar observatories run by NASA and so on. So it makes it look like a miniature sun sitting there in the public space. And this is done around this time of year. In Melbourne, it's winter time. It's part of a festival called Light in Winter. The idea being you have a festival of lights at the time that it's the shortest day, it's the darkest time. I'll show you a little bit about this piece. So this is a space in the centre of Melbourne, Federation Square, which is surrounded by art gallery and Australian Centre for the Moving Image and Television Station. And you can see the scale of the heliostat there. I think what's interesting about this work is it's not simply a video loop that's running. What it is a series of mathematical equations, so it's going to play different imagery each time it runs. It's open-ended. And it gives you a kind of a simulation of what the sun would look like. And it is controllable by the audience. And you'll see in a minute the artist showing how the audience can create certain kinds of effects using this piece. So that's Raphael on the right there, and he's explaining to someone how you can control it using. So they had an iPhone app that you could download, and then you could control the sun with your iPhone or with one of those tablets that they had around the site.